Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we want to follow up now on one particular exchange between Kane and Pence the other night in the vice presidential debate that I thought was very interesting. I thought Pence started off in one place in his answer and wound up in another place. And this isn't just about things that Donald Trump said and whether he's a basket of one deplorable, but it gets to a deeper issue of implicit bias in society in general and on police forces. So as fatal police shootings of black men continue to polarize the country, often along racial lines, the issue of implicit bias in policing is obviously a prominent topic of conversation. Clinton and Trump were asked about it in their debate, and Clinton's response really kind of sparked this heated exchange between Pence and Kane during the VP debate on Tuesday. So we're going to focus more closely on that exchange now and the ideas and policy implications and realities that it suggests. So here's about a minute and 40 seconds of this exchange. Mike Pence speaks first.
The bad-mouthing that comes from people that seize upon tragedy in the wake of police action shootings as a reason to use a broad brush to accuse law enforcement of implicit bias or institutional racism. And that really has got to stop. I mean, when an African-American police officer in Charlotte named Brentley Vinson, an all-star football player who went to Liberty University here in the state, came home, followed his dad into law enforcement, joined the force in Charlotte in 2014, was involved in a police action shooting that claimed the life of Keith Lamont Scott. It was a tragedy. I mean, we mourn with those who mourn. We grieve with those who grieve. We're saddened at the loss of life. But Hillary Clinton actually referred to that moment as an example of implicit bias in the police force, where she used, when she was asked in the debate a week ago whether there was implicit bias in law enforcement, her only answer was that there's implicit bias in everyone in the United States.
I just think
what we ought to do is we ought to stop seizing on these moments of tragedy. We ought to assure the public that we'll have a full and complete and transparent investigation whenever there's a loss of life because of police action. But Senator, please, you know, enough of this seeking every opportunity to demean law enforcement broadly by making the accusation of implicit bias every time tragedy occurs.
Elaine, people shouldn't be afraid to bring up issues of bias in law enforcement. And if you're afraid to have if you're afraid to have the discussion, you'll never solve it.
So that was part of the Pence and Kane exchange. Here's 30 seconds of the original Hillary Clinton statement from the presidential debate that Pence reacted to so strongly there.
I think implicit bias is a problem for everyone, not just police. I think, unfortunately, too many of us in our great country jump to conclusions about each other. And therefore, I think we need all of us to be asking hard questions about, you know, why am I feeling this way? But when it comes to policing, since it can have literally fatal consequences, I have said in my first budget we would put money into that budget to help us deal with implicit bias by retraining a lot of our police officers.
Hillary Clinton from the first presidential debate. With me now is Alexis McGill Johnson. She's executive director and co-founder of the Perception Institute, an organization that works to reduce implicit bias and discrimination through several initiatives, including training police departments and corporations around the country. We'll talk about all of this in the presidential race and with the work that she does on the ground. Ms. Johnson, welcome to WNYC. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
And in the pitch that your organization sent to our show about this segment to propose having you on, they said this acknowledgement of implicit bias by Clinton in that clip was unprecedented. Do you consider that an unprecedented statement by a presidential candidate?
Yeah, certainly for a candidate. I will definitely give credit to President Obama for lifting up implicit bias into a lot of the work that he's doing with the and Eric Holder and the Department of Justice. They have certainly been leaders in this effort, particularly around policing. But the notion, I think, when Hillary Clinton is speaking about implicit bias in other domains and getting us acquainted with the fact that our teachers, our doctors, our workplace providers are also, you know, we also hold biases in a lot of other professional ways that it's really critical for us to deal with as a nation.
So what did you think of the Pence-Kaine exchange?
I was actually very troubled by it, I have to say. And I think particularly because Pence used the words implicit bias without a sound understanding of what the science indicates. And in some ways, the way he used it was actually to interchange it with explicit bias. And so, you know, what he was suggesting was that Secretary Clinton was painting the police with this, you know, with this racial bias brush, suggesting they were all racist, as opposed to kind of acknowledging what the science has shown us, that we all hold bias because it's how our brains have evolved and become hardwired around issues of race, and that bias doesn't make us bad people. In fact, it makes us human. And I thought it was very, very detrimental to the broader conversation that we're having around implicit bias and how the science has been incredibly constructive in helping us reduce racial polarization in these conversations.
Funny enough, I thought that later in his answer, he actually came around to an acknowledgement of broad-based implicit bias and embraced community policing as one way around it. But he was politically going after Clinton, and he was pushing back on the Charlotte case and the assumption, as he saw it, that this was a case of bias as opposed to a tragic but necessary judgment on the part of a police officer. And he singled out the fact, as we heard in that clip, that the officer in that case is black. How about black people and implicit bias against black people on the police?
Yes, African Americans can hold bias against other African Americans. And in fact, when you look at the implicit association scores, largely, you know, when you take the IAT test at Project Implicit at Harvard, you see that 30% of African Americans roughly hold a strong bias or preference for whites, a strong bias against blacks. And, you know, that is significantly smaller than perhaps the white-black bias. But at the same time, the idea that we are all hardwired by the same images that we receive from culture, largely, and the associations that we make mean that not only am I an African-American, I can have a bias against other African-Americans, but as a woman, I can also have bias against other women. And so it actually just reinforced the point that we all do hold it, and this is not kind of a code word just to call white people racist or just to suggest that that implicit is actually in contradiction with our conscious egalitarian values.
Listeners, what do you think about the clips we played? What do you think about the discussion that is breaking out to a higher level of visibility in this country about implicit bias on the police force and in society in general? 212-433-WNYC, or if you have a specific question about training police officers or anyone else to be aware of their implicit biases and to stop them as much as possible from influencing our behavior in negative ways. My guest, Alexis McGill-Johnson, Executive Director of the Perception Institute, which works to reduce implicit bias through initiatives including training in police departments and corporations. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Maybe you should talk more about the difference between implicit and explicit bias, which you said you thought Mike Pence was getting confused there. Probably a lot of people, you know, hear those terms and they go, what, implicit, explicit, I don't know. So where would you start, and where do you start in your training?
Do start with the term explicit bias, and surprising to us at Perception, the term explicit bias is the most searched term on our website, because I think people are trying to understand the differentiation. So explicit bias would be the conscious way of, kind of our conscious expression that we don't like a particular group or category. When you think of explicit bias, you think of something, you think, 60 years ago, the KKK, the Bull Connor on the horn, those are the explicit statements, the animosity that has come out of certain groups. You can think about explicit bias today, the cultural conversation and political conversation around Muslims in this country, around immigrants, that is actually explicit bias. There's nothing kind of unconscious about that. They're creating associations that are negative and harmful to a group of people. Implicit bias is kind of how our brain makes quick automatic associations between negative stereotypes and characteristics and groups of people. And so it's an important concept for us to understand that our brains are doing a lot of work every single day. They take upwards of 11 million bits of information in every second unconsciously. And we are only conscious of about 10 to 40. And so what our brains are kind of like Google. They have to sort through, in a big search engine way to make sure that they can help us as human beings navigate through the world. And part of how we do that is we create these schemas that also don't just apply to objects, they apply to people. And so the way that we should think about the implicit bias piece, and I think this is really what undergirds the importance of what Secretary Clinton was saying, is that most people in America have very, very egalitarian views about races, right? We believe that all races should be considered equal. And yet, because we have these biases, because our brains have been essentially hardwired to create negative stereotypes around certain groups. So for black men, we are associating them with criminality, which creates fear in us. It undermines the core values that we have, and we react in very quickly to grab our purse, to, if you're a police officer, you may be quicker to shoot. And what she says is that, she affirms the fact that police officers are, by and large, fair people. They're out there trying to protect and serve the community. They are good people, and that bias is actually a very human phenomenon, and we have to figure out a way to support them so they can do their job and live their values consistently.
So since you do these trainings with corporations and police departments, I'm going to take a call here from Nell in Manhattan, who I think is going to describe a bad experience that she had with corporate anti-stereotype training. Nell, you're on WNYC with Alexis McGill-Johnson from the Perception Institute. Hi there.
Hi. I was at a big law firm, and they wanted to do an anti-stereotyping type of workshop. The company, I later looked up, had two-day workshops, one-day workshops, half a day. Well, we got a two-hour workshop, and it started off talking about stereotypes. It was so short, the workshop, that we really didn't get into how it can become an implicit bias, how it's not like you might say, oh, I'm not going to hire that person because they're black, but just to start to be aware of how that, prejudice might affect your hiring or how you treat somebody else in the workplace. And what happened is, when we walked out after 2 hours, I heard people saying to each other, you know what, those white people are like that. Or you know what, that this ethnic group is like that. Or that racial group is like that. So if it's not done right and really people are given the time to become comfortable about talking about these issues, I think some of these workshops can just backfire and reinforce. So could you talk about what really... what a good workshop does, and does it need to be done over several weeks so that people have time to think about these things? Because otherwise, I think it can really backfire.
Yes, thank you so much for that question. I think you're absolutely right, and I think you're pointing to kind of a challenge with even just the introduction of implicit bias, into the public conversation. Oftentimes, what we hear is that, I was introduced to this concept of implicit bias. Now I recognize I have a bias, and now I see it everywhere, and I don't quite know what to do about it. So just making people more conscious about their unconscious bias does not, in and of itself, work. I liken it to going on a no-carb diet, right? It's like, you know, you say, I'm not going to have any bread for the next, you know, whatever, 2 weeks, and you last about an hour because you become so conscious of how much bread is in front of you on any given moment. So your brain needs structure. It needs some rules. It needs some systems and practices so that it can focus on kind of essentially how to be good in this respect. And so the training, what a good training should do, should be to open you up to the concept of implicit bias. It should also open you up to the concept of racial anxiety. The fact that part of the challenge we have about recognizing our biases is that we're afraid it's going to confirm that we may, in fact, be racist, which is something we hold to a very high degree of immorality. So we want to make sure that people not only recognize that bias exists, but that they have a name for that feeling of discomfort of recognizing that our value structure may be kind of out of alignment. And from that, and I think the science does help us disarm that racial anxiety in a great way, but at the same time, from that, what we want to do is bump people out of just trying to identify their own personal biases and bump them up into interrogating the kind of the patterns of their office, of their, you know, medical, you know, provision, their service provision, what have you, so that they can see where in their daily practice might they be making very quick decisions without the right information, where bias may intervene. And that's the kind of work that I think these trainings should lead to. You know, we should be looking at, you know, when we are hiring, you know, have we set an established criteria that allows us, you know, in advance to have a schema of who we want to come in and then see whether or not that person matches or not. That's the kind of work that I think can be incredibly meaningful, and it allows us both to be conscious of the fact that we have these biases, but also understand that there are a set of protocols that can help us reduce those in important ways.
What's the police department training expression of that? Because like the NYPD, after the Eric Garner case and Michael Brown shooting, came up with, I think, 3 days of new implicit bias training to, you know, help make sure that there's as little of this as possible on the NYPD. And, you know, a lot of the reaction out there was, well, 3 days, what's that? So how much time does it take you when you consult police departments? And what's involved? Because you can't just have a guy stand up in front of a class of cadets or recruits and say, okay, you know, look at everybody the same. I mean, it's got to get into the guts of it in some ways. And like you were just describing, maybe there has to be interaction, maybe even uncomfortable interaction between people who are different. I don't know. What is the police department version of this that works?
I mean, I think the part of the reason why Pence and Kane both came back around to agreeing on the community-based policing is precisely the point that acquainting yourself with different groups, you know, building up relationships, having intergroup contact actually helps us reduce bias and anxiety because you're able to replace stereotypes that you hold about a group of people with the individual folks that you are meeting, right? You're learning how to individuate, which is a very big challenge, you know, for most of us who have been raised in the last 50 years believing that colorblindness should be the dominant racial justice vision. And oftentimes when we notice race, it makes us a little anxious in having done so. So the police trainings really at this point are looking at, you know, exposing people to implicit bias, understanding shooter bias, which is kind of the when helping police discern the difference between a person of color with a cell phone versus a white person with a gun and understanding where is the real threat, right? And then I think also just helping police departments understand how to collect data in a way that will help them understand the trends that are underlying the work that they do. I think a lot of this work, a lot of the trainings are you know, again, in various stages, some of them are just introductions to the bias and creating buy-in to helping departments recognize that this may be a challenge for them, that this work is not about searching for bad apples. And I think the unfortunate tragedies that have happened in so many different cities around the country have allowed police departments, which are local creatures, right, have allowed them to understand that these problems are more systematic than just the bad apples in Ferguson or the bad apples in North Carolina. And so I think a lot of the work is helping to, a lot of the training is really helping to kind of raise consciousness around this so that they can then interrogate their own systems and practices, which may vary by department.
Genevieve in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hi, Genevieve.
Good morning. How are you today?
Okay.
Thanks for having this discussion. It's a really important one. I just wanted to chime in. I'm Puerto Rican of European descent, so I'm fair-skinned and have light brown hair. And as a young woman, I would often go to, you know, bars and restaurants in Park Slope and, you know, with friends who were Irish, redheaded, and other backgrounds. And they could never figure out what I was. And when they found out I was Puerto Rican, there was that immediate, like the speaker was discussing, that immediate, response of, what? You're Puerto Rican, but you don't look Puerto Rican. You don't sound Puerto Rican. And that just, you know, addresses this issue that's being discussed of that innate feeling of not understanding what another race, quote unquote, is supposed to look or sound like, and those internal prejudices that have been hardwired into us, which I think very much do exist and that we absolutely need to address. And now I have a teenage son who's 17, who is half Puerto Rican and half German-American, who looks white, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. He's fair-skinned with green eyes, and identifies as Puerto Rican. But his friends are mostly biracial as well, who happen to be African-American, who look African-American, even though they're biracial. And he has had a few incidences, and the one in particular that disturbed me was he was getting on the train with a friend who was biracial but looked African-American, and they were stopped by two police officers, and his friend was pulled aside, and they demanded identification on his friend. And he was pulled aside very politely and just asked to wait while they ID'd his friend. And he came home very, very upset. And it makes me, as a mother, afraid for my son, who quote-unquote looks white, in a situation right now that exists in this country where I have to be afraid because for him and his safety, because he does have friends who are African-American, mm-hmm. that he goes out with, which I think is extremely sad that he would have to live with that in this day and time. And I think we definitely have to address this issue, not just with the police officers, but with the, you know, population in general, that we really do need to identify our own feelings about this.
Have you been aware, given your own look and your own experience, as you described it, of mm-hmm. what feels to you like being treated differently by people who think you're not Puerto Rican, think you're white, and people who know you're Puerto Rican?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. When I was dating my husband, who is German-American, tall, blonde, blue eyes, and we would be out and people would assume I was quote-unquote white or of Italian descent or of Irish mixed descent. Mm-hmm. And I would tell him, you know, when we're talking and introducing ourselves and if the race issue comes up or, you know, identity issue, ethnicity, don't tell them that I'm Puerto Rican. He said, why? He goes, aren't you proud? I said, yes, I am, but it changes people's perspective. And he always said, no, it doesn't. It does not. They don't, you know, they don't really care. And I said, look at their eyes. There's something that happens in their eyes when they learn that I'm not who or what they think I am. And he started to observe, and he realized that it was true, that people, and it wasn't meant to be cruel or prejudicial, actually. It was mm-hmm. just an innate response of like, oh. And some of them would just innocently, you know, blurt out, again, but you don't sound Puerto Rican. Mm-hmm. And I would, of course, joke and say, well, if you want me to talk like this and that makes you feel more comfortable, it's okay for me, you know? And then, it would, you know, we would laugh it off, you know? But, it's kind of sad that, especially in this country, where we are a huge melting pot, and I grew up in the Lower East Side of Manhattan and here in Park Slope, and we're of so many backgrounds and ethnicities that we really need to embrace each other and not fall into these traps.
Genevieve, thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Alexis McGill-Johnson, before you go, I want to do one more thing and bring it back to the policy level, because you said before that President Obama has been a leader on this. So let me play a one-minute clip of the president from his recent ABC town hall on race. And in this clip, he discusses implicit bias.
Police departments that are doing the best work are also training their officers not just on shooting, not being good shots, not just on the technical aspects of police work, but they're also training officers about how do we get rid of some of our implicit biases. And we all have them. Black folks have them, white folks have them. We all carry around with us some assumptions about other people. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, that because of the history of our country, and because of the images we receive as we're growing up, etc., oftentimes there's a presumption that black men are dangerous. And so that has to be worked through. And police officers who are getting that training end up being able to engage and de-escalate encounters more effectively.
So, Alexis, as we run out of time, what would you like to see? You do your work individually as a consultant with police departments and corporations. What do you need at the policy level that we don't already have to back up this work?
Look, I think it's at the policy level and it's at the rhetorical level that, the biases that we hold, I think people tend to think of them as these individual DNA tests that oh my gosh, I've got a bias against women, a bias against blacks and Latinos, when in fact these biases are actually reflections of our social structure, right? We're taking in cues from society and culture. And so the way we talk about bias, and I think the very irresponsible way that Pence talked about implicit bias, where the science is undermined, is a big challenge for the work that we have to do moving forward. On the policy level, as a researcher, the real importance here is what kind of data we can collect to help us understand the trends and keep this at a systemic level and not make it a focus around kind of bad characters or bad individuals. This is about figuring out how can we make the best systems, audit those systems so that we have the right practices that are, where we know we are actively reducing bias. That is the work that I think we can do in police departments, in education departments, in any variety of ways around this country. And I think that will make us, accountable to, the right data will hold us accountable to the right values.
Alexis McGill-Johnson, Executive Director and co-founder of the Perception Institute, which works to reduce implicit bias through several initiatives, including training police departments and corporations across the country. Thank you very much for coming on with us.
Thank you so much for having me.